How's it going, everybody? We are back yet again with another episode of Debate Night. We've got four great analysts today, got some very fun topics to discuss. Disc golf was back this previous weekend, so we should have a lot of interesting things to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about AB, a little bit about disc golf betting later in the show. Should be very interesting to see what people think about that. Certainly has been met with a lot of critique online so far. But before we get into any of our topics, let's go ahead and introduce our analysts for today's show. Brody Smith is here as always.
Yeah, nice new background, Trevor. Liking it. Comments were interesting last week. It seemed like there were some that were siding with me that were saying, hey, listen, I don't want to listen to someone read, which I completely agree. There were some people saying they were falling asleep, which I also was kind of falling asleep. So being the man of the people, I was just trying to throw it out there. And then there were some people that I think misunderstood and being like, no, you need notes for a debate. I'm not saying don't have notes. I'm just saying don't like write it out and read it word for word. Like I have the worst memory. If I'm trying to, you know, pull some stats and stuff, trust me, I have them written down, but let's stick to kind of the general talking and not, I'm trying to like just read an essay off your computer is just brutal, man.
Okay. We'll see if anybody agrees with that. But yeah, I mean, that's fair point. It's fair point. Reading verbatim is definitely different than having notes. Sam is returning today.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate the invite.
Fun fact, guys, Sam's sick camera shot. That's just an iMac. They're making cameras just that good iMac. These days.
It's incredible. Unbelievable.
Wait, what?
Yeah, that's just a standard iMac camera. Not a paid advertisement.
Oh, like that's your webcam.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Crazy.
That's very nice.
Another guy sitting in front of a brick wall today is Gary.
Great to be back. Just remember there are three types of people in the world, those who can count and those who can't.
What happened?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Got me for a second.
Wait, I'm not... it's way over my head. I don't got it. Someone fill me in. I feel like an idiot.
Help me.
Get in the comments. Let us know if you figured that one out.
There you go. Love it.
Yeah, totally got it, guys. Oh, I got it now. And then Hunter is here as well.
I will totally not read off of my computer, and I will fly by the seat of my pants to make sure that I can compete with @BrodySmith21.
This is what I'm gonna do. If I lose this week, I'm going to AI generate the answers to next week's debate night, and I'm just gonna read them off. That's what you're gonna get.
Yeah, it's
yeah. Welcome to the club. Isn't that what everybody does?
That's what everyone's doing. I mean, how you get points?
Sometimes they can be pretty smart. I think that's how kids are getting degrees this day. All right, we're gonna get into our first topic here. Talk a little Anthony Barella. So. AB, he's continuing to his historic start to the season with yet another win at the Jonesboro Open. Is this the best start to a season ever? And what are your expectations for his season now that he has set the bar so high? Brody, what do you think?
Well, I think we've all seen that stat that's been going around where like the last time this happened, I believe, was 2019, right? Paul McBeth winning three of the last five. So it's not something that's never been done before, but now we have to kind of compare. And I've been very firm with just where I have seen the game in 2020 and where I've seen the game now. I was absolutely garbage. And some of you might still say I'm still garbage at disc golf, but I was absolutely garbage at disc golf in 2020. And I was beating people on the pro tour. That doesn't happen anymore. There aren't garbage people on the pro tour. So I think you have to look at it. The tour has changed so much from every year. Disc golf is getting hard. The courses are getting harder, right? They're finding new ways to make it more challenging. We now are getting standardized tee pads. That's like a new thing. Baskets are probably coming soon. The depth of the field, which I talked about earlier, is getting much, much better. So until I think like disc golf stabilizes and you're like, oh, there's not that much difference from year to year, we have to assume every year if someone does something that someone did in previous years, it's more impressive because things are changing in that direction, right? We're not playing plumbers anymore.
Okay. All right. So Brody is definitely kind of saying this is the best season, best start to season ever.
Yeah. I mean, has anyone won four of the first five?
I don't think so.
Hunter's shaking his head. Yes.
maybe. Well, we'll get to that in a bit. Oh, Sam, what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think anybody's won four of the first five, and I don't think AB has either because he's only won three of the first five, if I'm not mistaken. but that's beside the point. Is this the best start to a disc golf season ever? I have to say no. I think it's up there. It's probably tied for the best start to a disc golf season ever. But I mean, we've seen it before. Paul did this in 2019. That's not that long ago. Yes, the field's a little bit deeper, but it's pretty much still the same game. Like, he's not doing anything too crazy yet. What I want to see is, what is AB going to do over the next two or three events? Where is he going to place in those? Is he going to continue his dominance, or is he going to fall off a little bit? Paul in 2019 not only won three out of the first five, but of the eight events that were labeled as Disc Golf Pro Tour events in 2019, Paul won six out of the eight. I want to see where Anthony Barella stacks up through eight events. If he gets to five or six out of the first eight in this field, yeah, it's the best start to the season ever. But I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we can quite judge it yet. I want to see how it plays out a little bit further. You know, there's still 17 events left in the season. I want to see, we're not five events in is not as far in as it used to be, because there's more events. So I think we need to let it play out and see what it has. As far as expectations, I just hope he keeps playing well. You know, everybody wants to see him succeed. I think he can do it, and I hope he has the season that everybody wanted Calvin to have last year.
Sam, yeah. That was the question.
What do you mean?
I'll hold my rebuttal.
Save your rebuttal. Gary, what are your thoughts?
I'll hold my rebuttal.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree. I mean, we're talking about just through the first five events, so I'm going to have to disagree with Sam here that we're not waiting. We're talking about just a start. It's hard to argue against this start as not being the best we've seen. Statistically, it's got to be one of the best starts we've ever seen. If you look at the stats compared to the field, you know, he's the first in average birdies per round, the second in lowest bogeys per round, first in park percentage, second in C1 in regulation, first in C2 in regulation, third in fairways hit, and first in strokes to gain tee to green. And he's leading that one by a landslide. There are some other things to consider. Like Brody said, the strength of the field, it's completely different. Despite that strength of the field, AB has shown that he can lead from the front. I mean, look at chess.com. He fended off a surging Ricky Wysocki. He fell apart a little bit on hole 17, but he clutched up on 18 and took it to the end. At Texas States, he led after all three rounds. So he showed us, I can lead from the front. And then he showed us at Jonesboro, despite having a slow start, that final round, he was even par through 13 holes. He said, I can come back and I can do this. There was a singular moment there that shifted everything for him. It was that eagle putt from inside 60 feet on hole 14. That burst of emotion as he ran to the basket. I mean, Nate said on commentary, I think the person who's going to hit the eagle on this hole is going to win. And guess what? It actually happened. Going forward, I think there are a bunch of events that play really well for AB. And I think even the ones that don't are still attainable for him. Personally, for me, I think this year we see AB's first major win and maybe another one to two or three wins on tour. As AB said himself after the fact in an interview, he's just cruising now.
Music to my ears. All right, Hunter, wrap it up for us. What are you thinking so far?
So the greatest start, if you just want to go pure statistics and don't factor strength of field in, is Macbeth 2015. He started off, we're just using majors and NTs, but it gets even crazier if you didn't. But first at a major, second at an NT, first at an NT, first at an NT, first at an NT. That's the four out of five that's happened before. Macbeth went on to not finish outside the top three for that entire 2015 season. That's 9 years ago. Okay, so if you factor strength of field in, this is the greatest start of a season. I did want to bring up this PDGA stats tweet to farther back that up. All five MPO Elite Series events this season have been decided by one stroke. The previous record was three back in 2020. So this is all neck and neck. Before 2015, 2019, even 2018, 2017, all of those years where you saw dominance, you saw greatness from Macbeth and Ricky, when they won, a lot of times, gosh darn it, they won. They won by a lot. Like the 2015 final nine worlds was a victory lap for Paul, and that was not that uncommon. That is not happening anymore. So looking at the second part of this question, expectations, there's no way he keeps up this pace. Let's just be realistic. I just said all five have been decided by one stroke. That if that eagle putt hits low, we're in a completely different ball game now, right? Like that's, we're dealing with inches here. I think he has a chance at Music City. I think he struggles at Champions Cup. He went 9 over at Northwood during last year's Ledgestone. There's definitely more events he could get in contention at, especially once we get kind of the West Coast and some down the stretch like USDGC, but it'll be interesting to see what happens once he loses momentum. I think he ends the season with five wins total.
That's a good point, Hunt. How Brody feels about it, but it is true. Like when a guy starts the season and is winning like every other weekend, and then all of a sudden maybe they go five events and don't win. What does that do to them? You know, does that kind of creep in a little bit? Who knows? Okay.
Yeah, Sam, I don't know if you're reading or not. You definitely were not listening when I was saying, because I feel like everything you said was just like acted like what I said just didn't matter at all. Saying that the field is the same in 2019 to now, I was like, I know it's not, because I played in 2020 and I'm playing now, and I'm at the bottom of the leaderboard both those years, and I can see the different level of play. But I just went and looked at Worlds back in 2019, which we're not even going that far back. We're just going to 2019 and Worlds now. Here are some people, because looking at this list, all these guys are still playing to this day. 2019, you still have Paul, Ricky, Conrad, Emerson Keith, Chris Dickerson, Sexton, Kevin Jones, Eagle, Simon, Nico, all those guys, Eric Oakley. That's your top 10 back in 2019. All those guys are still playing. You know who wasn't in the top 10 or top 20 back in 2019? AB, Isaac Robinson, Calvin Heimberg, Gannon Burr, Alden Harris, Kyle Klein, James Proctor. All those people I listed were in the top 10. So you're not having like, all these people that are really good at 2019, they're not playing anymore. They're still playing, and there are even better people playing now. To win now is way harder. You can't say it's not. Also, what wasn't happening in 2019, you didn't have a bunch of European people coming over playing events. They maybe came over and played a major, maybe, but we're seeing the top players in the world playing almost every week now. It is not easy to win out there.
The point of my argument was not that the field is exactly the same as it used to be. I could poke holes in your argument about, you know, certain players being in the top 10 then versus not being now. Players get worse over time. It's part of every sport.
It's true.
One player that's dominant in 2019 is not obviously going to be dominant in 2024. That's just not how sports work. People age, people get better, people get worse.
All the people I just listed, though, for the most part, are all really good.
You didn't name a lot of old guys, though.
Yeah.
They're all still good.
Nobody's arguing that they're bad.
Who on the list that I just say are bad?
I would agree with Sam that there is players you just named on a list that have declined. Nate Sexton?
No! He just doesn't play that often.
Nate Sexton.
Which means that he got worse.
Nate Sexton was like a shoe-in for top six every time he showed up.
That doesn't mean he got worse. No, stop. What you guys are saying is different.
Nate Sexton is a worse disc golfer today than he was back then. I will stand on that.
Stop. What you're saying by saying he was a shoe-in for top 10 doesn't mean that he got... That's not a good argument to say that he got worse. If you go to a bunch of C tiers and get top 10s,
Nate Sexton today. I don't think
that it's the place that matters. I do think that he was a better disc golfer then, though. Like, I think there are guys on that list.
You watch his game.
That were better. And once again, I will say that I think that, yes, this field is obviously much stronger now, but a lot of those guys you listed, I think, have gotten worse.
Can I just give you some stats real quick? Sorry. Just going back, I will say last year he did have an off year. I will say that. I looked at last year. He did have an off year. 2022, he finished 21st at DDO, 11th at OTB, 10th at Portland Open, 9th at Worlds, 10th at USDGC.
Mm-hmm.
That's he's bad?
2 years ago. That's 2 years ago. No one said he was bad. We said he's worse than 2019.
And that was my argument.
Freddie, are you having a worse season this season than last season?
Yes.
And there you have it. Players can get worse in 1 year.
No.
I've gotten a heck of a lot worse since 2019. I can tell you that much.
What you guys are saying right now, what you guys are saying is ridiculous.
I agreed with your argument. I sided with you.
There are so many better people playing to where now.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If Nate Sexton misses a couple punts, he doesn't finish in the top 10.
I do think
he finishes outside the top 30.
I do think the field is much better.
The field can be deeper and players can get worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's because the... The finish, the compression of the finishes are also different. You know, you're not having players win by tons and tons and tons anymore. We just talked about how that's, you know, one stroke. So the margin for error is just going smaller and that's smaller and smaller.
The difference between different now than it did. The difference between first and 10th at Worlds in 2019 was 20 shots. The difference between first and 10th at Worlds in 2023 was seven shots. What are we talking about? I feel like I'm talking to a bunch of crazy people.
So you don't think I want to ask you one question, Brody.
Yes.
So has Tiger Woods gotten worse at golf?
Yes, he had surgery, major surgery. Surgery. You idiot.
Okay, what about
the heck is wrong with you?
What about, I mean, name any other player.
He's also 40 plus years old.
Is
Hunter.
Arnold Palm, he's dead.
We're talking all the people. Hunter, all the
players
people
can get worse. It's the only point I'm trying to make.
All the people I just talked about are not 40, Hunter. Your argument is so stupid.
That doesn't matter. So you, yeah, that wasn't. Age.
Nate Sexton stopped touring and was a dad. He probably isn't practicing that much.
So that makes him, he's probably worse at disc golf. So he has gotten worse.
There's no point to this argument because it wasn't the key point of my argument in the first place.
One guy that isn't really trying to be a professional disc golfer.
I didn't pick Nate Sexton. You did.
Ricky Wysocki's worse.
You're screaming to scream.
No, I don't think Ricky's worse.
Okay. Eagle or Emerson Keith? James Conrad? James Conrad won a world championship after. So you're gonna say
he's worse than when he won the worlds? Yeah, I think he's gotten a little worse.
You guys are saying he's worse, and the thing is like if you really actually look at how they're playing, they're not playing worse. It's just there are more people in the field that now bump you down.
Everyone. I agree with that statement, but that's not true for everyone.
I think the majority of people, yes. The majority of people, yes.
But some players can get worse.
But also, people are judged based on their score compared to the field, not just their score compared to past years. Because conditions are different every year. So you're not playing the same game on every course year after year.
What I'm saying is we're listing a bunch of people that have not had serious injuries. They're not 40 years old. They're still like at what time? What's your prime in disc golf? Do we think AB is going to start getting bad at 30? You want to make that bet?
Brody, getting bad question. Has nothing to do with age. A lot of time. Your putt could get off and then you could be stuck for a whole year just because you're not putting well.
Has Paul McBeth gotten worse at disc golf? Is Paul McBeth a worse player today than he was in 2019?
I think now, like this year and last year, I think you can look at that because I don't think he's practicing nearly as much as he was.
So he's worse at disc golf than he was.
But when he was starting to lose and people were wondering what was going on, I don't think he had gotten worse.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying
I think there was better people around to where if you play bad, if you have a bad day, you don't win a tournament anymore.
I agree with that statement. But Paul McBeth today is a worse player than Paul McBeth in 2019.
That for every
You're
player
talking
that-
about people that are slowly fading out of the sport, though.
You listed the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the people that you look, but I'm just saying, Brody.
Yes, and I'm saying all the people that are
anybody,
still, all the people
that
are still
that we're
playing
saying,
and there are better or about the same. Nico,
listen, like three of them.
Nico, Simon, Eagle, Chris Dickerson, Emerson Keith, James Conrad, Ricky.
The people that you would say.
What's that?
I would argue that Dickerson maybe he had a bad couple seasons.
He's playing well. Last year he was the worst disc golfer.
Yeah, right. You can get good again. I'm saying golf fluctuates.
Ricky Fowler went through that period.
Yeah, I will.
Ricky Fowler never got worse.
You're sitting there denying that golfers can get better and worse without like some major injury or age involved.
Not,
it happens.
Not drastically though, Trevor.
We never said that. We never said
AB can get worse the next week. What are we talking about? If AB doesn't win next week, is he worse at disc golf? Are we saying he got worse at disc golf?
No, but if that continues for, you know, a year.
Years.
We're just talking about like a year. I literally just went back a year and a half. I only went back less than a year and a half ago at USDGC and Nate Sexton got a top 10. And you're like, oh, that's what are we talking about? We're not talking about years. Get out of here. Move on. Let the comments throw L's all over the place, but all you right. guys are ridiculous to think.
I'm confident that
the field now is at all somewhat similar.
I actually made the exact opposite argument in my point.
That was not.
You're claiming that people are bad, and that's nope. they got bad, and
never
that's why
that
they've fallen off. Yes,
I said some players have gotten worse, and the field has gotten a lot stronger. Both can be true.
Both can be true at the same time. That's what I've said this
whole
time.
The only players that you've listed that have gotten worse are those that aren't touring full time anymore. That
again, you listed them.
What you, that's not a good argument. What are you talking? I'm listing the people in the top
players.
10.
You gave me players. Next question. This is going nowhere.
Right, we'll move on.
Because you're really hard to argue with because you're not actually making good points.
You're walking in circles.
We will move on. You can discuss.
Sam, listen to the question. Listen to what I say next time. Aaron, I wish you had jumped in on my side because you actually were on my side there with your points. That's okay. I understand.
We're going to move on to the next topic. We're just going to talk about the disc golf course. We're going to move away from the players for a little bit.
Watch out, AB. When you're 28, you're going to start getting bad, dude. Watch out, man.
Might. Disc Side of Heaven reordered the course this year, keeping most of the holes intact, but changing when they were played during the round. One of the most glaring changes was the new hole 18, previously hole 5. What did you think about this hole being chosen as the 18th? Did you like how it played? And do you think par threes work as the finale of a tournament? Sam, what are your thoughts?
I think this is a question that's going to get a lot of mixed opinions and probably a lot of loud voices too. Do I like how it played? Yes, of course. I think it was an exciting finish to this tournament. The tournament couldn't have ended too much better with AB throwing inbounds, forcing Calvin to go for it. And then, you know, inevitably Calvin came up short and that kind of put a damper on things. It kind of just cut it off cold, which is why I don't think this is the greatest choice for a hole 18. Any hole where the tournament can be won or lost off of the tee, I don't think is a great hole 18. I want to see a par 4 or a par 5 where players are having to play chess with one another. I want to see some gamesmanship. I want to see somebody purposefully throw 20 feet shorter than the other person so that they get to go first, or purposefully try to outdrive them, forcing the other person to make a decision. You know, I want to see somebody force themselves into the driver's seat, force somebody else into the driver's seat. Because if AB had thrown OB going off the tee first on hole 18, then all Calvin has to do is lay up and take his three and just hope that AB doesn't throw a miracle 100-foot shot from the drop zone. And I don't think that's disc golf anybody wants to see. At the end of the day, this hole ended up playing well for this tournament, but I think it leaves opportunity for excitement to be lost in a world of disc golf where we need more clippable moments and we need more excitement to draw more eyes to our sport.
Okay. Sam wants to see some chess on the 18th. Gary, what did you think about the change?
My initial take on the change was sadness, because I think hole 1 was such a great starting hole. It was big throws for players, picturesque. And I think hole 18 was such a memorable finisher. I mean, Brad, the course designer, even said he thinks it was one of the best holes on the tour, but it was impossible to enjoy for spectators. That's why they made the change. But despite that, I think the layout actually played fairly balanced and was entertaining. The new layout created a lot of interesting things on the final stretch. If you look at holes 13 through 17, you see there was an average of a 45% birdie rate. 29 eagles were carded on hole 14, and Wayden Sides 4 strokes to play hole 15 3 times. Mind blown. But it gave every player a chance to claw back with 4 or 5 birdies they knew were available at the end of their round. And we saw that there were 5 or 6 players who were in the hunt. But the closing stretch wasn't without danger, which is the best part here, because holes 14, 15, 17, and 18, they were responsible for 61% of all OB strokes for the entire weekend. And hole 18 had a 35 to 40% bogey or worse rate on average each round. With 4 possible winners coming into hole 18, I think hole 18 did its job this year, but it risked a very boring finish, because what if Barella was up by 1 or 2? Nobody wants to see a layup drive for the win, just like Sam said. And Barella and Heimberg, even in an interview about the course, said that's a problem that can't happen. Personally, final holes for me have to be par fours, allowing for safe and aggressive shots. Nothing should be decided off the tee, like Sam said. It requires more of players to finish a round. I prefer the original hole 18. Give me the new layout at hole 18 at the end. We're good.
Okay, so kind of an agreement there. Hunter, are you on the same page?
I am. Yeah, it's unfortunate that I'm going third here because I don't really know what else to add, but I'm gonna try. So I like how it ended up playing, as everyone said, but that was about the best it could have played out realistically. At the end of the day, I think par threes just aren't ideal for the final hole of the event. My reasoning is more so viewership, because it just doesn't let the drama build enough. Once the tee shots land, like in this case, once Calvin's tee shot landed, was there a scenario where it could have still went to a playoff and stuff? Sure, absolutely. Highly unlikely, though. And so you kind of felt the moment deflate. Like, it got there, everyone threw their tee shot, done. Sick. Okay, everything had just built up for 18 holes is over in just an instant. The par 4 and 5 allows the story to build, allows that moment to build, allows the tension to build, which is what you want as a storyteller, which is what you want during a broadcast, which is what you want when you're trying to keep viewers engaged. And so obviously you can't write the story in sports, but you can try your best. And course design is one of those ways you can really affect how the story plays out. And I think a par 4 or 5 is what really allows that tension to build in the moment that you possibly have the most. Because like a par 5, there could realistically be 3-stroke swings. There wasn't going to be a 3-stroke swing on that hole ever. So someone could go up by 2 and lose it all on hole 18 still, which keeps the viewer engaged all the way through. And then you're also sitting there even several holes before going, well, hole 18's coming. So I think 4 or 5 is where it needs to go.
Yeah, sometimes just having that idea that a lot of strokes could be won or lost on a hole is important. Brody, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this many times, a par 3 is a pretty lame way to finish a tournament. I think it's also a cop-out a lot of times because you only have to execute one shot. And when you have the lead, only having to do that, it's a lot nicer. You also don't have to really make a decision at all. Right? Like AB didn't really have a decision to be made on that final hole. Ben Callaway did, I guess you could say Ben did. He could have played for par and forced the issue with the other guys behind him with a one shot lead. But I think the par 5 actually would have been a much better finishing hole, which is actually right next to that one. So you would have that same gallery, I guess. And Gary kind of nailed it. The idea of why this became hole 18 was not because, oh, this is a good hole to finish on. The idea was, well, our old hole 18 like sucks for spectators. That's not a good answer to switch. And then I'll push back a little bit. I think hole 17, Gary was saying he likes the risk reward there. I think in that instance, having the OB around the basket kind of sucks. If you look at like Ben Callaway's shot, he would have been OB by quite a bit and had a long putt and probably would have missed anyways and made par. He would have gotten the same score. I think when you have OB around the basket like that, you can be pretty aggressive because you know, even if you go OB, you're still going to have a putt for par.
Yeah, a lot of times the OB can be so weird in disc golf. A lot of times it acts as like a safety net when
correct.
Realistically it's meant to punish the player when it's that give and take of like, oh, it's close to the basket, so you have a tight green, but also if you're throwing long approach shots, you could just nuke it knowing that the worst I have
distance.
yeah you're not wrong. Definitely would make things difficult there. All right, we are going to move on now, talk about Calvin Heimberg. That's definitely kind of been a recurring topic, but it's now almost coming up on a calendar year here. So it's been nearly a calendar year since Calvin Heimberg won on tour at last year's Jonesboro Open. Obviously took place a little later in the season last year. Is now the time to start the narrative that he has forgotten how to win, or is he exempt from that label considering his consistent podium finishes? Curious to hear what you guys have to say about this. Gary, what are your thoughts?
I think it's ludicrous to say that Calvin's forgotten how to win. If that were the case, why is he given the opportunity to win so many times? I think the better question might be, why is he not winning right now? And I think that's because the field has grown beyond allowing mistakes to be made in big ways. I mean, the double bogey he took on hole 10 in the final round of Jonesboro, that was shocking to me because when I think of Jonesboro, I think of Calvin slicing and dicing that fairway every single time. The last 3 years on that hole, he's had 7 birdies and 4 pars. He hasn't even sniffed a bogey, yet alone a double bogey. But I think his biggest regret might be on hole 16, where he put himself in a decent position to get a birdie. He just needed a little chip forehand. And he said in the interview that down the stretch, if he needed to, he might throw one. The biggest thing for me is he watched Simon throw moments before him to go over the top, and Simon went out of bounds. And he decided to follow that line anyway, and he found himself in a position where the par was really tough to get, or the birdie was tough to get, and he took par. You don't get to take rounds off anymore. And I think Calvin's figuring that out. If you look at the Open at Austin, in the first round, 3 players outscored Calvin. In the third round, 2 players outscored Calvin. But guess what? Second round, 29 players outscored Calvin. At Texas State's, same thing. First round, 1 player outscored Calvin. Third round, 5 players outscored Calvin. But in the second round, 22 players outscored Calvin. The field is not tolerating bad rounds anymore. I think Calvin's a threat to win every single weekend that he plays and gets on the tee pad. And I think he's capable of winning multiple events this year. And I think he's going to. I just think right now he needs to try to find a way to keep it more clean through the entire event, especially these three rounders where he doesn't have the extra round to claw back.
Yeah, interesting. Zat there kind of falling asleep almost in that middle round there.
Was he OB on 16? Did they make that OB behind the back? Because he made his putt.
I don't.
On 16. No, he decided to go. So. He came up. He decided to go over the top, and he landed like in the bushes off to the left.
I know, but then he made that putt.
No, he missed that putt short.
Oh, he hit it in the cage.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he took the par when he could have just.
Okay. I think initially they were thinking that was OB, and maybe that's where I got confused.
Because Simon went OB on this almost the same.
He went
line.
Left. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
All right, Hunter. Do you agree?
Yeah. So I think the thing to remember right now, if we're talking Calvin, like today, is as Gary alluded to, he still doesn't have his forehand back. So he's just not a complete player out there right now. And the performance he's able to put up out there without one of the assets to his game is pretty remarkable. It's unfortunate because I do think that this early stretch we're playing in is his best chance to win all year. But as we saw last year, he can get in contention anywhere. Now, what I think the key difference is last year we saw a lot of turn-ins where he would get in contention and we saw some just like, what are you doing moments. This year, it feels like the mistakes aren't like that. Like we literally saw some like 15-foot putts missed under pressure last year, which was like, okay, this guy's forgotten how to win. I don't think we're seeing that this year. So I don't think this narrative really holds weight because I think that he's putting himself still in a position to win while injured, which is impressive that he's able to do so. And I think once his game's fully back, then maybe we can talk as it goes on. I think the narrative does hold weight for majors because that's something he hasn't done yet. But with so many Elite Series wins under his belt, I don't think that's something that's on his mind right now. I think right now it's just getting back healthy. And I think he's probably even surprised that he's still rattling off top fives like it's his job with only that one blip being chess.com. So the wins will come at the Elite Series. Can he make it happen at a major? That's still TBD.
Okay, Hunter not ready to pull the trigger on that narrative yet either. Brody, are you?
Yeah, well, I mean, Hunter was beating around the bush. Let's just say what it is. Calvin's worse, guys. Calvin is worse. He is a worse player than he was a couple months ago. And we have to deal with that.
True.
You know?
Well, he's injured. So.
Well, no, he's worse,
makes
though.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But he's worse. No, let's be real here. Again, kind of going back to my point. So many things have to go your way to win on tour. It's no longer, hey, if I just go out there and I play well, I can win. AB opened the door with poor play in that front nine to allow someone else to win. Even though he played incredibly well, if Ben Callaway doesn't miss that 7-footer, if Ben Callaway doesn't miss that 15-footer, if Ben Callaway doesn't go OB on 18, Ben Callaway wins by multiple strokes this tournament. The tournament was for Ben Callaway. Also, you look at Ezra. Ezra doesn't run that stupid putt, which this is after tour life. I'm going to hound him on why the heck he ran that putt. Also, why the heck is Ezra trying to throw a 350-foot straddle forehand over water on the par five? Like, if Ezra doesn't do those two moves, Ezra wins the tournament. A lot of stuff had to happen, and AB had to go 6-under through five holes, that five-hole stretch, to win. It's... You know, Sam's going to come on here and say it's actually not that hard to win on tour. But I'll tell you, it's hard to win on tour, folks. And Calvin just, unfortunately, he's like the Dan Marino right now. Are we going to say Dan Marino was trash?
I mean, I didn't say Calvin was trash either.
Well, did Dan Marino not know how to win? Or did the chips just not fall his way? That's all I'm saying.
People would say it maybe, but he also played a team sport, so that's a little different. Sam, what are your thoughts?
I'm gonna come in with a hot take here. I think maybe Calvin has forgotten how to win. and I looked back at it yesterday, and I think that maybe when you look at it, it might be Parker Welk's fault. Parker Welk was the last, before this weekend, Parker Welk was the last person to beat Calvin Heimberg at a tour event by a single stroke. Parker Welk went down the stretch and went shot for shot with Calvin and ended up beating him. And since then, Calvin has not come in second and only lost by a single stroke. He's put himself in at the top of these tournaments, right? But he hasn't been that close to the leader when it really comes down to it. Is he playing great disc golf? Absolutely. Calvin Heimberg probably has the highest floor out of any disc golfer on tour, right? His floor is probably better than anybody else's, but I'm starting to think that his ceiling might not be much higher than his floor, right? I think that Parker Welk might have shaken his confidence, which is causing Calvin to make these mistakes down the stretch, right? That double bogey this last weekend that took him out of it. He fought back. He has that floor, and he's a great disc golfer. He was able to fight back and put himself one stroke away from winning this tournament, but it wasn't enough because his confidence isn't there. He might have actually just forgotten how to win a little bit.
Listen, I actually really
like the floor. Hold on. Did he just contradict himself by saying like Calvin hasn't gotten close to winning and then just ended it by saying he almost won?
As close as that event he mentioned.
First event since he lost DDO to Parker Welk.
You're saying he had one stroke of a win.
That's a statement.
Okay, but he was two shots away from winning, and Nicklaus played absolutely out of his mind at the end to win.
Make a statement a lie.
No, I know, stats, you can throw a lot of stats out. We all know this, Trevor. You can throw a lot of stats out there to make it seem like your point, but it's not accurate. Like that's not saying Calvin hasn't been close to winning is insane. He has been close to winning. He hasn't been close to winning.
He said it hasn't been as close.
I think you're pulling things out of the air and inferring some things that haven't been said.
Take his argument and pick it apart when he didn't say a lie. Like, I mean, he said he hasn't been as close as that tournament. That's completely correct.
Sure. If we're going to say one shot, he hasn't been as close. But the notion
is exactly what I said.
Great, Sam. But the idea that one shot there is okay. Continue on.
He was just picking a narrative. Listen,
point of the show.
He was picking a narrative, and I'm saying his narrative is wrong. Calvin's been super close to winning multiple times.
Listen, it's fair to say that, like,
he was trying to make it seem like Calvin hasn't been this close in forever, and
it's fair to say that even though that he hasn't been that close, he still is in it to win all the time. That is completely fair. And what I will say though, Sam, is I do like your floor ceiling point. I never really thought about it that way, but I think you may be right in. Like, how often do we look back at a tournament and be like, oh my gosh, Calvin went ballistic, and it's that much different than when he just plays his normal game, which is really good. Yep. It may just be that his floor is like fifth place and his ceiling a lot of times is like third, and that's just where it ends up.
Well, I disagree. He doesn't have the highest floor.
Who do you think has a higher floor?
AB.
Well, this season, then you could argue that. Well,
no, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about this year, Trevor. He has the highest floor. I'm talking about facts here, aren't we? See how stupid
my argument went into last year. So I was taking last year and being the greatest
start. You're the only one yelling, Brody. You're the only one
yelling. Right, I'll yell all day. I don't care.
I know you.
You yell in the chat. All the people that don't like yelling.
This peak entertainment.
Listen, I'm excited. I like getting Gary.
Listen, I agree with a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B. And you know what? I yield my floor to watch Sam
Gary's
and Brody
just sitting
fight
back
it
and
out.
Just slowly make his way to the championship.
Good.
I wish this is where this episode. I wish Dustin was here, man, to just get.
Oh my god!
Get so riled up right now.
Every time I see Brody get excited, I just whisper in his ear, "Do it."
Well, it's funny too because there's some people in the comments that are like, "Wow, Brody was like really bowling. He's like super mean." It's like they understand that this is like a show. Like I'm not
arguing with me all day. Please,
Sam and Brody are roommates, guys.
Yeah. I thought people asked me afterwards, like, "Is he nice afterwards?"
Yeah, I still think some people don't like arguments.
Yeah,
but it's fine.
So arguments about sports.
Maybe don't watch debate night. Exactly.
All right. We got one more thing.
Me and Hunter were on debate night. That's the show that you want to see.
True.
Where me and Hunter
no arguments there. We tried our hardest.
Yeah. All right. We got one more topic to argue about. I don't know if anybody will have an argument for this. I'd love to hear it. But so Maple Hill, they made a splash in the disc golf community recently when a picture of their new triple Mando was leaked online. Do you think the Mando looks good? Do you think it will add to the hole? And are you a fan of artificial obstacles in general, Hunter?
Yeah, well, let's start here. Okay, does the structure that make up the Mando look good? Yes. Would I love them to finish it out, put it in my backyard, and I can put my leaf blower in it? Yes. Does it fit on one of the most naturally beautiful disc golf courses in the world? No, not even close. It's awful. And it's on the first hole, too. So it's like, welcome to Maple Hill. Can't wait for you to see the clown nose on 18. Like, what are we doing out here? This was like one of the most jaw-dropping things I've ever seen. If we want to artificially make courses harder, I'm for it. I'm golden. I'm here. Okay. But it's got to fit the vibe of the course. We talked about this with USDGC. Okay. USDGC already has this gimmicky vibe to it. So more gimmicks tend to fit in a little bit better. Do I agree with all of them? No, I hated the mozzarella sticks. I'm still not that big of a fan of them. They put freaking Christmas trees 2 inches from a tee pad. That wasn't the best idea, but that fits a lot better than Maple. You know what? Maybe the Christmas trees actually would fit better at Maple Hill. Maybe I take that one back. Maybe they would fit better there, but this is just a barn. I understand they're trying to go for like a covered bridge type thing, Massachusetts, whatever. Hoorah. Let's burn it. Let's not do it. Okay. Don't actually burn it. Sorry. Let's not, let's just someone get this off the course. Someone get this off the course is what I mean to say. We don't want it out there. It's going to be an eyesore. Luckily, this was kind of posted and leaked. We're in April right now. Let's get it gone by September. We got plenty of time to do so.
Okay, gone by September. Is that hashtag gone by September? Is that where you're going to get started?
Yeah, no, please imagine, don't burn it. No one, unless you're the owner movement of the property and you want to take it somewhere safe, that's fine. I just had to clear that one up. Didn't okay. That came out wrong.
Brody, are you nearly as passionate about it?
Well, I'll say that if the right people, if the right professional disc golfers say something, it will not be there. I'll say that. It is what it is. Does it look like it fits? No, but it was funny how Hunter was like super like adamant of like, this is the most naturally beautiful course. Cause like Yuli hates this course. He thinks it looks terrible because every fairway has a road down it, which if you actually start thinking about it, he's kind of right. Like every fairway does kind of have like a road. So it's not like naturally beautiful in the sense of where there isn't, there's roads. You're throwing, your fairways are roads. So Yuli does have a point there, but I think we all agree it looks weird, but does it serve a purpose? And I believe it does, because the trees on the right have been thinning out the last several years. And what that ends up happening is, one, you get shots that people are trying to throw through the gap that's intended, and they go through the right side, which is not intended, and they get lucky and they get birdies. That's not good for disc golf. And then also what ends up happening is if you throw a bad tee shot and you throw your, you know, everyone throws that landing zone shot and laying up. If you get too far to the right, we're all trying to throw it in the gap there. But if you get too far on the right, you can still just jump putt through those trees and you can do the same exact thing. So this change is actually going to make it good, because a good drive, also it's going to force people to try to get a little bit more aggressive off the tee to get more distance so they can actually try to get the birdie. I think it's a good change. Looks terrible.
Okay. Okay. Brody, respecting the functionality of the obstacle. Okay.
You can build a tree, unless you can grow a tree like that.
True. All right, Sam, what do you think of the new obstacle?
Okay. I think I'm about to go 4 for 4 here. I'm disagreeing with Brody again.
Oh no.
I don't like the execution of the Mando. I think it looks silly. It's out of place. I think artificial Mandos can be,
we agree there,
can be done. Yes. Yes. I'm not there yet. I think that they can be done well, and it just hasn't been done well in this situation. I think it just kind of sticks out, and it really, it ruins hole one. Where I disagree is that I don't think it makes the hole better. I don't agree that it improves the play of the hole. I think people are going to throw their bomb drive over the lake into the open or not so open field, depending on the growth of the trees. And then this triple Mando is just going to make people lay up.
Yes.
Like the hole already averaged over par last year throughout the MVP tournament. Why are we trying to make it harder? It's already one of the top like six hardest holes. It's in the hardest third of the course without the triple Mando. Sure, some people are getting lucky over on the right hand side, being able to pitch through the thinning trees, but a triple Mando here is just going to promote people laying up to it and then tossing through and taking their par and going home. I think it takes away some of the excitement and some of the fun of, you know what? I do have a line through these trees. Let me throw this half scramble shot to get onto the green. And it's just going to cause people to lay up. I think it ruins the hole.
Okay. Valid points. Gary, what are your thoughts?
When I first saw the post, I thought I had missed another April Fool's post. I was like, oh, I had a double take on this one. And honestly, no disrespect to Steve Dodge. I think the guy's a legend in the sport and probably one of the most genuine people I've met. But I think this is a clear miss. I think it's a classic case of having something that's good and way too much time on your hands. And you just need to know when to stop. A hole one at Maple Hill is like one of the most iconic hole ones for so many disc golf fans around the world. I remember my first time there. It's like stepping into a new world. But I think it detracts from the hole quite a bit, because there's no, you know, epic out of position shots. I think you're going to see too many layups. I think the gap already creates the ideal airspace to throw in. Maybe just a couple of Mando arrows to make go between that would be better. Plant Christmas trees on the side where the thinning trees are at. That'd be cool, and stick with the theme of the course. And I also think if the goal is to create scoring separation, it's probably not going to actually do that, because instead of scoring ranges from 3 to 6, you're going to see a lot of smart pars. And it's just people who are going to be laying up, getting their fours and moving on with an occasional 5 and a miraculous 3. I've also seen, you know, the comments about the risk reward scenario going through the trees. I'd understand if it was huge there, every player was doing it, but they're not yet. So let's wait and see what happens. Artificial obstacles, I'm not a fan. I don't think it's the way to do things. And I think there's a reason why everyone talks about mini golf when they see that kind of stuff. Disc golf is widely appreciated to be a natural, you know, outdoor activity. And I think someday there may be a way to incorporate them, but it's not today.
Okay. Yeah, you, Brady, what are your thoughts on
rebuttals?
Because I kind of like their point on, like,
we don't have money.
You may see more fours, yeah, like just like layups.
First off, this whole natural thing, golf is a natural sport. It's the least natural thing. If you actually see a golf course before, it's a bunch of dirt. Mm-hmm. So this whole idea that this is natural, no, that's a bunch of bogus.
I think what people mean to say natural is they just want will be in the environment, I guess.
Yeah, but you could go out into a patch of woods and you go, man, I could just see a disc golf line here. You could throw a disc through the trees. You're not going into an open field and going, man, if I just dig all this out and put a golf green here and a bunker there and a bunker there.
You're still cutting down trees. So it is like a whatever. But I think to Hunter's point, if they would have had the thing that they had on hole one at USWDGC, I think Hunter would have liked that. Did you guys watch that tournament?
Yeah, like Sprinkle Valley.
The nice triple Mando there. If they had something like that and it said Maple Hill, I think people would be less worried. But yes, to go to your point, Hunter, about, or Trevor, about the play, has anyone played that hole?
Gary.
Me.
Okay, me and Gary have played it. Great. Okay, so the idea that more people are going to lay up, a lot of people already lay up on that hole. But now, let me ask Sam, because I don't want to misconstrue his point. What is wrong with people laying up on that hole now? Like, what was your point? We're saying you're like,
you're saying there'd be less aggressive shots.
You're saying there's layups.
It's
right?
The score separation. Yeah, is everybody's going to be taking a 4.
Okay, I disagree. There's going to be more scoring separation now, because now your layup actually has to be accurate. If you're in the Christmas trees, you can't just chuck a shot that people were chucking. And then, like I said, again, I don't know if people are listening to me. If you throw your shot too far to the right there, it would be almost impossible to get up and down through that triple Mando. But in the old hole, you can jump putt and make birdie. People were jump putting and making birdie through the trees. So this idea that the course would play, it's no, you actually have to land it in a really small spot. And sometimes, like you guys were saying, people get in those weird Christmas trees and it's going to be very difficult. And now you also, like, if you're 250 feet, 300 feet away, that shot is now difficult. So a lot of times people would like punch out and be able to just chip up and get a par. That's, you actually have to, the scoring separation is going to be better.
Hunter, Gary, what are our thoughts here?
I had a question because Brody, you keep talking about like, how you need to be able to, like, you're talking more left to right. Why does it have to be a triple Mando?
I think it's simply because, like, what were they going to do? Just plant two posts?
Well, like Gary had mentioned, you just make those two trees that are already there the double Mando.
The trees are pretty wide.
But I'm just saying that it eliminates the problem you're talking about of going through to the right. Like, it solves that problem if that's the problem to solve.
I mean, if you want to do, if you want to do the two Mandos, that's fine. No one brought that point up, but if you want to do it,
Gary did. Gare Bear.
You said you wanted to have the two Mandos on the tree.
Yeah, I said you could do that. Or you could even plant Christmas trees that are themed with the course along the side.
Yeah, tree farm.
If you do the Christmas trees, I could see that. I think there would be less pushback. But I think
we can all agree if it was done tastefully, nobody would be talking about this at all. We just
it didn't look like a barn, but wouldn't even get posted on Twitter.
Listen, guys, you do something crazy like this, we're going to find a reason to talk about it on these podcasts. I promise you.
But how it's going to play? It's going to play better. People that throw better tee shots are going to have a better, an easier time of birding or parring.
How many players who are going to be a little too far to the right or a little too far to the left would go for that gap now compared to going for that gap if that triple Mando is there.
Wait, but, say it again. Sorry.
So let's take every player on the tour and put them too far to the left or too far to the right on their tee shot, but not that far. How many of them are going to go for the gap as it existed before, where you have the greater airspace trying to skip something in there, versus how many are going to go to try to go through this, you know, square?
But that's my point too, is like, now if they aren't going to go for it, now their second shot, there's pressure on that second shot to land in the spot. Because if you are a little, that's a very, Gary, it's a very tight left to right spot.
Yeah.
So if you're off just a little bit to the right, like if you're 5 feet right of the Mando, that might be nearly impossible to get inside a circle.
Is anybody thinking about pace of play though?
Who's going to get the first? Who's going to get the first barn ricochet birdie? That's what I want to know.
Ooh, I'm looking up the photo.
They should
right
put a cowbell on it that you ring when you go through it. That'd be fun. What else? You know?
Yeah, maybe they definitely
cow in there.
I was incorrect. They definitely could have these trees right here. They definitely could have put two Mandos.
Yeah. That was the first thing I saw.
And it goes to my birdies, or was it Gary that said they got too much time on their hands and like don't like that's probably what it was. It's like, well, we could just put arrows on these trees, or
about
a barn.
But it also, guys, it also looks like the right side has thinned out even more since last year. Like
maybe
I'm looking
it did.
At
maybe
it,
this was like a this might have been like, just like an emergency decision.
It looks like there's two trees there now. It's way thinner than I thought.
I'd love to know why not do the Mandos and put that there.
I was curious.
Yeah.
I think a double Mando fixes the problem. I think it would provide more scoring separation if it was a double Mando versus a triple Mando.
The triple Mando.
The triple is very hard. If
the scoring separation is not better this year than last year, I'll give you $20.
Ooh, there you go. I'll pay Steve Dodge money to go volunteer to ask him that question this year.
Excellent. All righty. Well, we're going to move on to our finals now. Hunter, Gary, all tied up. Moving on to the finals. Get rid of those two guys that just kept bickering, you know. This is a pretty juicy one. All tied up, we got a very juicy topic here, something that was just announced. Gary, you're our most recent champion, so I'll let you decide if you want to go first or second.
I relinquish my time to Hunter for first.
Okay. Hunter will go first. This is the question. The Disc Golf Pro Tour just announced a partnership with US Integrity, a move that brings them closer to the sports wagering market. This is being met with some very strong opinions in various ways, especially online. How do you think sports betting will impact our game? What are some potential strengths and weaknesses of this movement, Hunter?
So we got to look at this thing objectively first, okay? We got to take what it is out of it and just look at it, because let's take 2 points first. Will it bring more eyeballs to the sport? Yes. Will it bring more money to the sport? Yes. If you remove that it's gambling from this, I think everyone would agree both of those things are good. Where it gets tricky is, I don't think anyone has to be told, gambling has the capability to destroy lives. So the growth of the sport is good, but this decision does come at a cost. Let's look at me personally, right? I personally don't have temptation to overdo it on gambling. That's not something I've ever struggled with. I think it's a ton of fun to throw $5 on a team at a major sporting event, and it increased my interest in the game. That's sick. I lose every time. The house makes $5 off me. Win-win scenario. That's not the case for everyone, though, and I think that's the Pro Tour has to think about this as they move forward, and I think that's where you're seeing two different the opposing sides. I think it's definitely going to be polarizing, but it's also a line of like, it was eventually going to happen. What I'm very interested in is this has now happened in the season that we've seen the disappearance of Prize Picks, which makes me wonder, did the Pro Tour find out that legally they have rights to some type of information that was being used by Prize Picks to make these lines and they were missing out on money and that's how we've gotten here? Or is the Pro Tour just like, hey, someone's going to do it, might as well be us, but they're going to get a lot of pushback. It's just a question of like, is the Pro Tour willing to go? Because in the end, it will grow the sport, it will give content creators more talking points and interesting stats, it will make the game a lot more fun for a lot more people, and it will bring in more eyeballs with more intense focus. But at what cost, and is it all worth it? That's for the Pro Tour to decide.
Okay. Hunter, a fan of some of the bonuses potentially, but also leery of what the consequences could be. Gary, what are your thoughts on this whole sports betting situation?
I agree 100% that it's going to add more eyes to the sport and it's going to inject more money into it. That's a no-brainer. The gambling thing is the hard part here. Sports betting is exploding. You know, last year you look, $120 billion spent in bets, and the ads are pretty much everywhere. There are some legitimate concerns for disc golf. One of them being is how close players are to the outcomes of those bets. You know, while I'd like to think that players wouldn't do anything, they're all human. I mean, it happens on the large stage. Look at last year with the five football players at Iowa and the Alabama baseball coach betting against and for their own team. That's where I think the partnership with US Integrity is a really great move. I did a lot of looking into their site. They're very interesting stuff. They have a lot of great YouTube content too, but you know, they're watchdogs of the betting systems across the board. They work with people like FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, and a lot of the other big sports organizations. And I like this because the DGPT is basically coming out and saying, if we're going to do this, we're going to try to do this right. Another big concern, obviously, is how the lines are going to be created. Like Hunter said, you know, with Prize Picks, a lot of people ran Prize Picks through the cleaners when that came out because they didn't understand how to do their lines. They had to shut down their disc golf book. So some serious work needs to be done to make sure to get that right. And maybe they could learn a little something from Coolbet, which is an interesting betting platform over in Europe that deals with disc golf. So what are they doing, and what are they doing correctly? One of the biggest negatives, obviously, is the perception of gambling. Like Hunter said, you know, are we contributing to an addiction? I think that's where another lesson can be learned by looking over to Europe, where this has better reception. You know, Kristen Tatar is sponsored by PAF. They give their proceeds to the public via grants, and it was estimated that, you know, they gave out 15 million euros in 2020 in public grants for like sustainability and whatnot. So I think their transparency really helps with like the overall community perception of betting. I think ultimately at the end of the day, it's something that's going to happen, but it needs to be done slow, calculated, and just be transparent with the public.
Gary, you know, I can never turn down those blue eyes. I'm going to have to be the win today. Good points. Good points from both you guys.
He wrecked me on that last one.
Good research,
that
was, Gary. Very good research. Very good. I will say disc golf betting, I think when it comes to the sports betting world, people's opinions are pretty set in stone. It can be like politics a lot of times where people are either going to love it or they're going to hate it. But I think the benefits are there. And I think the Pro Tour, the way that they move within the disc golf industry is always very carefully. So I'm sure that they're going to be treating this with the utmost care, because this could be a boycott level event if the right people got mad enough at the situation. So I'm sure that they are going to do it in a careful way. But I'm excited about it. Like, sorry. I mean, you don't think I'm going to be put in a parlay every single weekend and then losing when some guy rolls away from the basket 60 feet. It'll be interesting to see, but I could definitely see the scandals arising. A lot of people were mentioning that whole idea of like, we have, you know, Gary, you said it, we have these betting scandals that are happening in the NBA. We just had one. It was Michael Porter Jr.'s brother from the Raptors who might be getting banned for life from the league for betting on games. And you're seeing clips of him like potentially missing three pointers on purpose and stuff like that.
Well,
that's all I was just saying.
Oh, I was going to say the thing too is like, you know, Portnoy, for example, just had a crazy stretch where he ended up actually winning more money than the third place guy at the Masters, right? But he had to bet an insane amount. Disc golf, you don't have to bet that much to make more than the winner.
Let me tell you, when the price tick thing was going on and their lines were crummy, I didn't dominate the way some people did because I'm just that bad.
How about the players though, Trevor?
But I'm saying like I
know that the $5,000 make more than the winner.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying some of the guys I knew that did Prize Picks, their payouts were so good.
Yeah,
that, like if you were a player in control of that, forget about it. Like it's the temptation will definitely be there, and I'm sure that is going to be there's no way if disc golf betting exists, I would say this with a guarantee, there is no way we make it through five seasons without somebody getting banned for life for gambling.
Well, I mean, think of how often even on the Pro Tour a like 20 footers missed. Like our sport's
it's gonna be so easy to throw.
One of the
lines I wrote down from a Reddit comment was, you can make way more money throwing around than you can losing to Anthony Barella. And I thought that was really funny. That's so true. You can make so much more money throwing rounds.
That is right now. Well, Gary, you're the champion today. Multiple time winner now. What do you have to say about your victory today?
Oh, I just think it's great being out here talking about disc golf. You know, a little home game for all of you out there who say that this is super easy and that you should do this with no notes, or you should do this with all the notes. Play a little game at home next time. Pause the video after he asks the question and see what you can do for 90 seconds. And then listen to the
Gary,
rest of it.
Get him, Gary!
It's not as easy as it looks to come out here and do this. So
listen, you're 100% right. Listen, we have had a lot of different people on the show. What these guys do is not easy. It really isn't. Getting on air and being on live, basically, and then talking for 90 seconds about these topics, not super easy to do. So if you're in the comments and you think you're hot stuff,
we got to get that guy on Twitter.
That guy's never, never.
And there's the other side of it too. Like, if you're a big fan of the Pro Tour, it's even harder when you're sitting here and like Brody's the one talking you down, because it's a professional that you know, and you watch and you like. And
yeah, I'm wrong 75%.
Yeah, I know, but you're what I like about you is you're passionate about your points.
I didn't feel like I was
he's scary.
Titanic people where like Sam had a life jacket and I didn't, and I was like jumping on Sam the entire episode, and we both drowned. I think this is what ended up happening.
Yeah. Bro, if you were a smoothie, it'd be half passion fruit, Sam. Half dragon fruit.
You're fine.
All right.
It was a fun one, though. To me, these are so much better than everyone being like, yeah, I agree exactly.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, we live to yell at each other about sports. QR code here on the screen. Throw it up here. This is where you can submit topics. Some weeks, like this week, I didn't even need a submission because there were so many interesting things to talk about. But most weeks I do. And if you scan this or click the link in the description, you can submit your topics and I will take a look at every single one of them. I will pick some of them occasionally to throw on the show. Brody.
Also, Kristen Tatar dominated. I know we might have some people coming at us because we didn't have any FPO topics. Get over it. There was nothing to talk about. She destroyed everyone. So deal with it.
She did. She's the best. Hey, we talked about it on Griplock. Make sure to check that podcast out. It also rocks. And we will see you next Wednesday. I got to remember to talk in future tense with another episode.